Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is presented by The Brooklyn Kitchen. Learn more at brooklynkitchen.com.
Borders seem to be all over the news lately. You've got trade wars, Brexit, and of course, Trump's wall. This week on Meat and Three, we're exploring how borders are created and blurred in the world of food.
We try to focus a lot on the fact that they are chefs by nature, that the refugee thing is just a status for them.
And after the Soviet space ended, I don't think there was much research. It was all considered just Soviet food or Russian food, and I don't think it gives a lot of those cultures credit.
Tune in to this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network. That's meat plus sign THREE. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, guys, it's Tuesday, March 19th. 2019. I'm Jimmy Carboni, the host of Beer Sessions Radio. Got a great show tonight. A lot of cool things are happening in the world of beer, but our good buddies Alex from Spite and Dival, one of my favorite good beer seal bars in Williamsburg, and B.R. Roya and Joel Shelton from Shelton Brothers are usually on the top of what's going on. So we're just going to kind of talk about what they're doing. They've expanded into beer tours. There's one of our favorite breweries from Montreal, Du de Ciel. It is releasing the Pêche Mortale. It's going to be a Pêche Mortale day at Spite and Dival's. This is kind of like a little looking through the lens of one of our favorite beer bars and their relationship with one of our favorite beer importers, Shelton Brothers. So, guys, let's introduce ourselves. Everyone just say your name. And
B.R. Rolia with Shelton Brothers.
All right.
Hey, what's up? I'm Alex from Spite and Dival. I'm the GM and beer buyer.
I'm Joel Shelton, Dan Shelton's brother.
So the backstory on Spite and Dival, in the old days with bars and restaurants, the importer or distributor relationship was really important because that was the only way you could get your pick of what was good. And I remember that from my first restaurant. I had wine distributors that I really stuck with because those relationships are important. It's a little different than when you can just buy directly from a brewer in New York City. I know there's some backstory with Joe Carroll and Spite and Dival and Shelton Brothers. Do you want to talk about kind of the ongoing relationship that you have with some special importers like Shelton Brothers, Alex?
Sure. So I've been working at Spite and for over a decade. I was a bartender for a long time. And when the old GM stepped down, they were like, well, you seem to know a lot of what's going on, so you should do this. And that being said, working there for as long as I did, I got to know BR and Bob and Joel and all these guys and everything. So so it was just a nice kind of continuation because it was like I got to be professional work colleagues with people I was already friends with. So it was really great. So that's nice and everything. But then on top of that, we were, the relationship between Spite and the Sheltons is deep. So it was just nice to be able to work with people that really knew what was going on and had really cool stuff coming in that not a lot of the people were interested in or knew about. And they just were like, we want what you're doing. So,
Spear, what's the relationship like for you guys with a great beer bar like Spite and Dival?
It definitely makes the job easier. Spite has been one that's, they've been supportive since day one because we were bringing in small, at the time they were primarily focusing and still do on Belgian breweries with some Germans thrown in. And, we had some very, very small Belgian breweries that really weren't very well known. So, and Joe was very happy to put them on because it really made his list stand out because he wasn't just putting on the big names, even from not necessarily industrial size, but the bigger names that everyone was familiar with at the time back then, which is what, 21 years now? 20?
At Spuyten?
Yeah.
No, we just had our 15th.
15th. Okay, I'm getting
15 this past September.
Yeah. So but it's great. I mean, you know, they still
venerable. Still venerable, but
You know, they order a bunch of our beers. They're you know, their list is solid, and you know, it's one of our go-to spots when brewers come through town. They'll often say like, "Hey, can we do an event at Spuyten?" because they just like the welcoming vibe there. You know, it's a very warm place and enjoyable to drink beer at, especially when the backyard is open.
Mm-hmm. And I remember when did you guys first get Duduciel? Let's talk about that little brewery in Montreal.
It's probably been maybe about 12 years. It was shortly before my tenure with Shelton Brothers, and that's, I'm going on, I think, 9 years now. So I do remember that Dan had asked me to help with some of the translations from their labels at the time, but that was before I was working with them. They make fantastic beer. I used to travel up to Montreal frequently for my old job and told Dan, I was like, hey, you know, if you're looking to import some beers from Quebec, definitely check out these guys. And I know he and Tessa had gone up there and were very impressed. They're great guys, really nice people, as well as excellent brewers, and, you know, happy to have them in our portfolio. And yeah, this Saturday is the annual Pêche Day, which they do to celebrate their Imperial Coffee Stout, the Pêche Mortel, Deadly Sin. And Spuyten Duyvil was one of the bars that is poured. They're the only one in New York City. I think it started back in 2015 was the first time they did it in the U.S., and they only had two locations in the U.S. They had Spuyten Duyvil and then also Three Penny Tap Room up in Vermont. And then since then, they've been expanding. I believe this year we are up to 21 bars in the U.S., four in New York State, but only one in New York City right now.
It's an incredible list of places that get it too. I mean, it's like internationally is like a who's who of like some of the best beer bars in the world.
I think it's 68 bars around the world right now. They were inspired by Cantillon's Wansedai, which is, you know, celebration of the beer. All the bars will tap the same beers on the same day, and this year it's six different variations of the for the U.S. of the coffee stout. So, you know, you want to get your buzz on with, there's nothing like a Pêche, I don't know, hangover.
Pêche Mortel, and you don't even have it. It's coming in tomorrow, the delivery, right, Alex?
It's coming tomorrow.
So we don't even have a bottle to drink tonight.
Right.
Man, I got to go to Spuyten Duyvil on Saturday.
You do.
It's awesome. It's such a good event for us, because we're one of the only places to get it, and it's this time of year, too. Everybody's been inside for, and let's face it, this has been a really rotten winter. It's been hanging on, and every time you think it's going to be over, it just gets cold again, and it snows, and you get one warm day, and you know, but I think we're around the corner. I think we've turned the corner,
maybe. So let's have that coffee Imperial Stout kick off spring, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's a great like annual thing we're doing
now. You know, and the whole Shelton Brothers thing, you know, Joel Shelton's here too. You know, you guys, beyond finding all these beers, you guys are like, you know, kind of the beer hunters. You had Duduciel and then Jolly Pumpkin, the first American brewery you guys had. And then suddenly you guys had New Zealand beers. But you guys have put it together now. You're offering beer tours, which sounds like it's right up my alley, that I could go to your curated beer experiences. Look, tell us about some of the beer tours that you're part of, Joel.
Well, Dan has been talking about doing this for a really long time. The idea being to kind of recreate the experience of going over there and discovering beer, which is how we got started, of course. And Dan being Dan, it would never would happen if I didn't do it. So I finally said, all right, we're doing it this year. And that was last year. And we sort of did it last year. We had a tour of Franconia in northern Bavaria, and we tried to do a Spanish one, but it was sort of ill-planned. So this year we said we're going to really do it right, and we have three planned just coming up in May, Belgium and France, kind of going between the borders back and forth. And then in June, Barcelona and the area around there, which is kind of maybe an odd one. People don't know much about that. But then Franconia again, which is a place we go every summer. So we're just trying to show people what the experience is like actually being in the place and drinking the beer, which is sort of the next step up from just buying it here and drinking it, I think.
No, that's going to be great. And we're going to talk more about that. But let's talk about Duduciel. So I know you brought... So because Pêche Mortel is coming to New York, we don't have it right now, but we have another Duduciel.
Well, yeah, we actually did. The regular Pêche Mortel is available in bottles. The other variants mostly are just on draft for... for the event. Right now we're drinking the Iseki Nicho, which is their Imperial Dark Saison. And that was one that their former, the head of the brew pub, Bim, Luc Lafontaine.
Luc Bim
had, that was his recipe. Really, really nice. One of the first, I think, dark saisons to come out commercially. Really nicely balanced between the character of the Belgian yeasts and then the roasty notes, but not overwhelming. And he's got his own place now in Toronto called Godspeed. And we're getting draft from him right now.
Yeah, we had him on about a year and a half ago, I think.
About, on the show.
Yeah. And Alex, what other DudeCL beers do you usually carry? How does it do for you guys?
Great. Awesome. Because people who know, like, good beer are fans. I mean, and they make beers that have, like, you tell people what Pêche Mortelle is. A lot of good, educated beer drinkers know what Pêche Mortelle is. And, you know, they make that. They make great barley wine in the wintertime. They make some really delightful stuff, sour stuff, raspberry. They make one called...
Le Solstice d'été.
Yeah, d'été,
for the summer.
Right. That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's just like this beautiful, bright, tart, raspberry, kind of lactic thing. It's fantastic. It's amazing. Yeah, so, you know, we always try to get stuff when, you know, we're particular. We don't get everything, but, you know, the stuff we get in, man, yeah, we can't really keep it on the shelves. So,
how do you describe DudeCL, Bjor? Are they just innovators? Are they artisanal?
I think
brewers?
Both. I mean, they started as a brew pub in Montreal with a very, very tiny space, and they still have that space. And then I think they had their 20th anniversary. I think maybe that's why I'm confusing the 20th. Their 20th yeah. was this past fall. A fantastic event they had. It was actually in a church basement. They had to stop the music at, I think, 4 or 5 p.m. because Saturday evening mass was going on upstairs. So they said, for an hour, we're not going to have any music. We'll turn it back on when mass is over. But they now have expanded a production facility to out in Saint-Jérôme, which is about 45 minutes to the west of Montreal, because by law, you can't package beer for sale at a brew pub. It has to be a separate facility. So they've got that. That's where all the bottles are coming out of, where most of the draft that comes to the U.S. comes from there as well. But every now and then, about 4 times a year, they'll send us a mixed palette from the Montreal brew pub of really exclusive items. So we might get 3 to 4 kegs of something that are only a brew pub beer that we then farm out to really good accounts around the country. Some places, Spuyten can't because they don't have enough draft lines. They're full up with Pêche this Saturday. Mm. But other bars are taking in some of these special beers from around the country on Pêche Day, or, you know, might pour for other events. But, you know, they started out as really kind of one of the innovators. A lot of people were thinking in Quebec or, you know, in Canada, you know, you've got Labatt's, you've got Molson, you've got the big industrial ones. In Montreal, you had Boreal, you have a McAuslin, you know, which do some very solid kind of middle of the road. You know, they'll do a blonde ale, they'll do an IPA, they'll do a stout. And DudeCL was one of the first that was actually putting out really, really good beers that were, you know, not just sort of a step up from homebrew, but actually beers that were creative and complex. And at the time, there was very little of that in Canada. Quebec tended to be at the forefront of the craft beer in Canada, I think. The other provinces tended to be a little bit more like focus. I think it might be their Francophile attitudes, where, you know, both with cheese and with food, because the other provinces were more Anglophone, were having, you know, they had their IPAs, their stouts, their porters, whereas the breweries in Quebec skewed more Belgian, more European, or more continental than British.
Yeah, I've had some great beers from them. What's the one with black pepper? Like root.
The root daisy piece, yeah. The spice roast.
Spice daisy piece.
A rye beer with green and black peppercorns.
Yeah. We get that one at Spain. That's one of the few.
And those beers were great back then, and they're still popular, which is really rare, I think, to have a brewery that's that popular still after so many years.
That brew pub is, we had the very, very, very fortunate opportunity to go up there and actually brew a collaboration. They made a beer with me and my coworker, Chris Kachuka, who's another manager under Joe Carroll. And we went up to Montreal and we made a beer together. They were like so tickled and thrilled that we even said, hey, would this be a possibility? They're like, yeah, you got to come up here though. And man, they were the most gracious hosts, and they got us really, really drunk. And they're all incredibly handsome, and like
better stop this story here. sorry.
Are they all named Luke?
Yeah, they're all.
There's a couple Lukes.
Everybody, there's a lot of Lukes.
Luke.
Yeah, everything was just killer. That brew pub is amazing, and it is packed.
It's always packed.
Can't even believe how packed it was. You know, in the middle of the week, there was nowhere to sit. And it's not a big place, but they have a lot of seats, though. You know, I feel like there's a lot of tables and chairs and stuff.
But they pack them in, and it's both a neighborhood bar. Like, you get a lot of locals coming through who are just there to have a beer. But you also get the beer tourists, people are like, oh, I've got to go. I mean, that's the one place that is definitely top-notch.
For me, about 8-9 years ago in New York City, they were the most exciting brewery. When you first started working BR and they came down to New York for a couple of our events, it was really great. And I still think highly of their beers.
Yeah, they used to come down more often. They're now so busy, they keep saying, we got to come back to New York, so we'll try to get them down.
I want to go to the brew pub, that's the thing.
Oh, yeah.
So in terms of your tours and stuff, what would it take to set up a tour of Montreal? Like, what would be your ideal Shelton Brothers Montreal tour? You need some push, man.
No, we always
need more tours.
We want to see if these other ones work first, but we have a million ideas. But we were just talking before the show for the first time about a Vermont Montreal.
Yeah, we could do a Vermont Quebec tour.
Yeah, that would
there's
be
enough.
Because it's fun to cross borders and just show.
But do they have to be? You know, do they have to be places that you guys import, or could it just be your choice of?
We mix it up.
Restaurants.
We mix it up. I mean, part of it is to show the stuff the people we work with, because that's. It gives people who come on our tour the opportunity to actually meet these guys in real life and not just be tourists, and they can sort of experience what it's like to actually work with these people.
So who would you include in Vermont? Like, would you go to a pub? Would you go to restaurants?
I mean, we have good relations with a lot of the bars in Vermont, because they tend to pour a lot of our Quebec breweries, whether it's UDCL or Dunham or Trois Mousquetaires, Trou du Diable. So, you know, we could do that. I mean, Hill Farmstead, we've known Sean for many years. He's collaborated with a lot of our brewers, so I could imagine, assuming he was up for it. I mean, we're just starting to talk about this.
We're creating a tour as we speak.
As we speak, yeah.
But you have the remarkable liquids portfolio, too, and that's like...
That's true, yeah.
And they have a ton of Vermont brewers, too.
Yeah, Zero Gravity. I mean, you know, Joel and I have known Paul Saylor since he was working at Commonwealth here in New York City. Yeah.
Wow. Going back.
Way back.
Still remember.
Way back machine.
So we'll do that one next year.
Next year.
If we sell out these tours this year, people, we'll take you on a tour of the North, the Great North next year.
Well, let's make it to us. Again, what is this Duduciel beer that we're drinking?
This is the Esseki Nicho, the Imperial Dark Saison.
I love it, man.
So we needed something
Imperial. It's a boozy beer, too. It's 9.5%.
It goes down so easy, though.
And I taste the heat on it, too. Well, guys, this is a good start to the show. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
This episode is presented by the Brooklyn Kitchen, a recreational cooking school on a mission to change the world by teaching people how to cook like grown-ups. The Brooklyn Kitchen began in 2006 when two creative home chefs, Taylor Erkinen and Harry Rosenblum, recognized an opportunity to create a community space with approachable, hands-on cooking classes and inventive culinary experiences. Taylor and Harry believe that cooking is a daily practice in creative problem-solving. They bring this ethos to the Brooklyn Kitchen, a cooking school that fosters community and redefines home cooking for everyone. Now located at Sunset Park's Industry City, the Brooklyn Kitchen hosts a range of public and private cooking classes, corporate team parties, pop-up dinners, and tasting events for cooks of all levels. Learn more at thebrooklynkitchen.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Check us out, heritageradionetwork.org. It's our 10th anniversary. Lots going on, including the Hall of Fame. Some of our top guests have been already selected. Every month there'll be some newly announced. We had Dan and Taylor Suarez of Suarez Family Brewery, and Evan Watson of Plan B Brewery were some of the recent Hall of Fame selections. So congratulations to those guys. So BR, we're talking about Pêche Mortal Day at Spuyten D'Huile.
That's right. Alex, you were saying, tell us about the beer you brewed up in Montreal for your anniversary.
Ah, right. Well, so I deferred to the fine taste of Mr. Joe Carroll, who we were just tossing around ideas about what kind of beer we would like to make. They wanted to know what kind of beer. Jean-Francois wanted to know what we wanted to make, and I was like, well, I don't know. And Joe was like, how about a beer that emulates, and this is like kind of awesome and out of the blue and why Joe was great. He was like, why don't we make a beer that emulates the classic smoked meats of Montreal? Because Montreal is known for their smoked meats. And so Jean-Francois was like, that's awesome. We should do that. And so what they did is they created like a spice mixture. That was the kind of spices that they used. So there's a lot of cumin in it and some peppercorns and stuff. And so we made this like really nice, very dry, wasn't a grisette. It was a saison with lots of cumin and all the spices and stuff. And then it was great. It was a hit.
Was it pale color?
Yeah, quite pale, quite dry, light.
Did it smell like Schwartz's when you were brewing there?
That's the place, right? That's so Schwartz's is a smoke meat.
Yeah, right. No, not quite, but it was fun to do, and they put me to work too. I got to say, and like it wasn't just pouring hops into a boil. Like
and that brew house is tiny.
Oh yeah, I cracked my head a whole few times in that basement moving giant tubs of spent grain. The basement is about it's about 3 feet. It's like a crawl space, really. But that place has been there for so long; they just do it. They don't even think about, well, is this okay to store anything down here? I'm like, yeah, no, totally.
You in America, you'd always have a
and they can't
giant
expand.
Basement.
They've got a firehouse right next door, right, so they can't expand. They're on a corner, and so often I will get people, you know, accounts from New York buyers will say, like, "Hey, I'm going up to Montreal. Can you see if I could get a tour of the brew house there at you know the brew pub?" I'm like, "Well, you can go out to San Jerome and get a tour, but you're not getting one in Montreal because there's room for like two people."
Is it really? Yeah. It's a 3 foot high ceiling basement.
Yeah, it's really
good. And they make hilarious beer in that space.
Well, they have a little, an area, like a brew area where all the boil oil, the kettles and the fermenters and all that stuff are. And it's, they actually cut the floor away. So there are things that are sort of in this recessed area that you take a little step down and it's all stainless steel and everything like that. And it's all, that whole section is sectioned off by windows. So even if you're chilling in the brew pub, you can look over and see people making beer, you know. It's great. It's super cool.
Is it part of the old part of Montreal?
No, it's what they call the Plateau area. So it's a little bit further uptown from there, but the Mile End Plateau area. But, you know, there's a lot of cool stuff. There's a great, Casa de Popolo is a great music venue near there.
We went and got the bagels.
The St. Viator and the Fairmount bagels.
Fairmount,
the Montreal-style bagels, right. Which are...
Not bagels.
Not...
As a New Yorker, not bagels. No, I'm kidding. They're just different.
They're good.
They're good. They're very good. But they don't.
They are Montreal bagels.
They're Montreal bagels. Yeah.
In New York, have you had the bad black seed bagels?
Yeah, very similar. Black seed skews a tiny bit more towards New York, I find. I don't know if it's the water or the flour they use, but it definitely is very, very much. It is close to the Montreal style.
They're like thinner and chewier.
Yeah, and chewier.
Yeah. Wow. What else is about Quebec and Montreal? I mean, there's also Hoppenstark, you mentioned, mm-hmm. 12 Musketeers. Why is that such a great area for craft beer?
I don't know, but it is. I think it's the influence of, like, they try to stand apart from the rest of Canada. And, you know, their food is great. Their cheeses are amazing. I mean, I have a cheese notebook that I take up with me and always go to the cheese shops and be like, all right, I had these here from here before. Now, what can you get me that's, you know, like these? And they'll, you know, each time I've got different cheeses. They've got fantastic markets. The people are really into their food and drink. I mean, they really are. They've got fantastic restaurants, both on the very casual level and on the upper end level. And there's just so much going on with arts and music. So, and I think that, you know, the beer, the culture that feeds off of it. Everyone, they're going out in the summer. They love going out in the summer because it's finally warm. but they still go out in the winter too. You know, there's nothing nicer than sitting in the Duty Seal brew pub and having the Pêche Mortel during a snowstorm. Cause you're warmed up and you get a little bit of a caffeine buzz. You're like, yeah, I can take on 3 feet of snow.
That sounds good. I'm going to Spite and Dival on Saturday, man.
And we got the six different we've got the bourbon barrel aged version.
Mm-hmm. So you have six different
different variants of it.
Pêche Mortels on draft mm-hmm. at Spite and Dival this
Correct.
Weekend.
So those the original. Mm-hmm. You've got bourbon barrel aged,
which is last year's, right? It's not the newer because there was two and we were only taking one, and I think we're taking the older one.
It's the newer one.
The newer one, okay. Yeah, sure.
I believe so. And then cherry, they've got one with cherries, one with coconut. That's new for cherry and coconut is new this year, as well as cocoa. The Pêche Mocha is a new one. And then whiskey barrel aged as
Islay.
Well.
Islay Scotch barrel aged.
Yeah.
And how many were offered?
That many. Alex? That many.
There were six
offered. Yeah. There was two variants of the bourbon, and because we only have six lines, it sort of seemed a little redundant to have two of the same.
Yeah, it was a 2017 version and a 2018 version.
Right.
So Spiten's got the 2018 version.
Right.
And a lot of your breweries, you think they feed off each other? Because you guys have Cantillon Swans a Day, Duduciel's doing Pêche Day, you've got your festival. You know, tell me a little bit more about how some of your breweries, you know, feed off each other. And they definitely seem to have the same vibe sometimes.
Well, I mean, it's also we have a sort of a kind of a... The breweries that we work with often have a similar philosophy, and those are breweries that, you know, they're very committed to what they're doing. They might not necessarily, they're not necessarily following trends, as opposed to they are, you know, they're doing making what they want to make. Or we're working with very traditional old breweries. I mean, Joel can speak to some of our German brewers who've been around for years and years and years. And a lot of them end up collaborating. And our festival, which is coming up, we will be making a big announcement later this week.
We can't tell you where it is.
No, you can't?
We can't, but check in us. You know, follow Shelton Brothers on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and there'll be an announcement later this week.
You really can't tell us now?
I cannot.
But
it'll
by
be,
the time people listen to this, it'll be next week.
That's fine. it'll be in the early fall.
Somewhere in America.
But a lot of brewers actually end up getting collaborations, whether they come over and do collaborations with American brewers. You know, for example, we're drinking now the De La Seine Terrace Bulba. Yvonne will come and collaborate when he's over here. We have a recent one that he did with Crooked Stave when we had our festival in Denver last year.
Really?
They went to Belgium for that. They did one with Bellwoods from Toronto. So a lot of the brewers meet up at our festival and come out with ideas for collaborations. They tend to get along.
I hung out with the Bellwoods people over the weekend, actually.
At
the Pastry Town, which was awesome. That other half festival they had down in Industry City was tremendous. But I volunteer for these things, so I always like to go in. Because I don't want to get a free ticket. I just want to go and hang out.
I get paid for these.
Yeah, no, I don't get paid. I like to sing for my supper. So, I was helping pour, and I was hanging out with the Bellwoods folks, and they're awesome. It's really cool. But wait, about the festival, though. Can we play, questions? Is it a hot place?
Is it a hot place?
Yeah, like Georgia was like a hot place.
Oh, he's trying to trick us into saying where it is.
Is it a dry place?
We're not falling for this.
Oh, come on.
It has daytime and nighttime.
Oh, okay. Well, that narrows it down.
It's in the 48.
Lower 48. Okay, lower that's 48, good. Yeah. The continental United
continental
States.
Continental U.S.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So you should be able to figure that out.
All right. Does the state start with an M?
Never mind. We're not telling you. We're not telling them, Jimmy. Move on to something else.
That's all right. By the time we listen to this show,
we'll know.
We'll know. Fine. So... Keep posted with the Shelton Brothers.
We promise not to tell.
So De La Seine, these are like my dream breweries. You before you were talking that Thierrier is your godfather.
Yeah, no, I just love them so much, Daniel and his wife.
So let's go through. You got the Thierrier, French. Mm-hmm. De La
Seine,
we're
going there on our tour.
We're going to both of these on our tour, by the way.
Tell me about the tour, man.
Oh.
The French-Belgium one, that's the one I want to go to on that so bad.
You should go to the Spanish one, Alex.
You know,
we have a running joke that I try to convince Alex he loves Spanish beer. He really does, but he's ashamed because I discovered it first.
I don't not like Spanish beer. I just like to give you a hard time
about it. You're going to go on that tour. But we're going to, in May, we're going, the idea was we wanted people to see that there was stuff
right
across.
This is
what
Joel wants to talk about is the Spanish
beer. No. I'm talking about France and Belgium. But we wanted people to see that you go a few miles across the border and there you are in France. And it's equally great beer right there. It's not just about being in Brussels or Cantillon.
So who's on the tour? Belgium-France tour. which is a tour I want to go on.
The very first stop, in fact, is De La Seine, which we are enjoying beer from right at this moment. We're going to, in fact, maybe witness a brewing between Yvonne and Half Acre?
I think so.
Oh, wow. I think that's what he said. Cool. He actually said this a few months ago. I think I may be brewing with Half Acre that day. So we'll see what happens. We're going to be there in the afternoon.
And Half Acre's probably so psyched, like, oh my God, I'm making a beer with De La Seine.
Yeah, we're going to watch him.
Yeah.
Hopefully, you know, we'll see. Whatever happens, we'll be happy there. And then we go to Drie Fontaine, which is a decent brewery down the road.
It's okay.
I can rattle it off really quick.
Come on.
And in the evening, we go to Duranc, which is one of my absolute favorite things in the world.
We're not Duranc, Duranc.
I don't know how it's pronounced, but it doesn't matter.
It's French for the Ronc.
But we're having dinner with them. And then we go the next day, go off to Struze, however it's pronounced. BR, you could probably speak
No, Joel,
Flemish
you're go. No.
And then we're popping into the
not
cafe.
Not Struze.
We're popping into the cafe near West Vleteren, of course, which we take a little bit as ours because we were the ones that brought their beer in, but we're not going to the brewery. But we're in the evening going to Thierrier, and then we're having a dinner in France that night. And then the next day we go to...
They're opening the restaurant just for us.
Yes, exactly.
The town is so small that the restaurant's not open every day.
It's pretty awesome. It's pretty special. And the next day we're going to visit a couple of breweries in France, Saint-Germain, page 24. And we're having a special dinner with them, private dinner, lunch rather. And then we go to La Chulette in the evening, which these are places that people don't know very well, and that's what we wanted to see people.
Now, what's
to
the La Chulette, the spring beer? It's got like a flower on it.
No, that's Oberon, which we're going the next day.
The next morning.
The Cuvée des Jonquilles, the daffodil beer.
Yes, so we're going to Oberon the next morning, and they're making us lunch. And then we go to, we're crossing the border right just a few miles away, is the beautiful Blogive with the family. And then we're... thankfully having a rest in Brussels that night because we ate and drank our way through this whole border area and we're totally stuffed. But the last day is pretty decent. We're going to make a side trip to Kirkham, the Bink Brewery. And then what I understand is more or less a private tour at Cantillon. And then we're having dinner with the Cantillons, whoever's in the family is in town that day.
You know, my mouth is watering. This is like a beer history tour for me.
It's awesome.
I've had so many of these beers with you guys.
The point is that you can go on our tours and you can literally hang out with the brewers, the real guys, it's not just this thing you stop and go to the gift shop or something. It's we're introducing to these people and how they really work and not just the famous breweries in Belgium or something. So that's why we want to cross over into France and show these other things. So that's the point of it. So we think it's very special and that's what we're carrying over to the other tours as well. So there's something interesting in every country.
Wow. Of those, BR, which breweries in Belgium and France would you really want to go to or that you've been to and you appreciate?
All of them. That's why. I mean, actually, I've not been to the Duranca brewery, so I'm looking forward to that. I've been to all of our French breweries. But the thing is that, I mean, that's, you know, why we chose this area because there is, and there's a lot of commonality when you figure, you know, southern Belgium, northern France, you know, the border has not been around for that long, but the beers have been. And stylistically, they're in the same family and just wanted to show these. And they're small breweries, you know, it's not quite the same as American breweries. You know, a lot of these buildings are older. Some are quite, La Chulette is quite old. And also the history of brewing, for example, Alain Dossi, the head brewer at La Chulette. I mean, he's just a trove of information about French brewing history. Daniel Thierrier has been brewing for quite some time. He's in an old building as well, a lovely little tap room. And each one has they're very idiosyncratic in terms of their brewing systems because it's, you know, they're not just ordering a new tanks from a supplier, you know, from 10 years ago. Some of these buildings have been there for, you know, 100, 200, 300 years. And, you know, they're all working in their own way to kind of figure out how to brew in these situations. And a lot of them were, you know, and even in France and for Belgium, might only distribute locally to some small places and then a few larger cities. But, you know, they're not considered the bigger names. And it's great to give people, the visitors that come on our tour, to show them, like, these are all the different breweries, the different styles. It's just something you don't see in the U.S. the same way that you can see there. And we want to bring people and let them understand, this is why we decided to import this beer from this brewery. And these are the people who make these beers. Because it's really fascinating.
Well, now what's this, the Duranc? Was it XX?
Double X. No, this is the Extra. Thierrier Extra.
Thierrier
Extra.
one of my favorite beers in the world, I must add.
So, and everyone talks about, you know, like double dry hopped, you know, IPAs and pale ales, but it seems like some of the beers in your portfolio, so the De La Seine, the Taurus Bulba, the Duranki XX, the Terrier Extra Dry, aren't they kind of like a dry hopped pale ale? Or you want to talk about that, how the French and the Belgians might have been ahead of American craft beer? Any stories
these styles,
like that?
These are styles that have been in those areas for a long time. They weren't just invented yesterday, and they didn't just think, oh, we just shove hops in there and it makes it awesome. It was always a balance, and they have really beautiful European hops there. And the yeasts are actually used for other breweries around the world, too, Terrier yeast.
A lot of farmhouse ales coming out of the U.S. use the Terrier yeast.
Right.
And as Joel says, it's in balance between the malt and the hops. The extra is dry hopped. I don't think the Taurus Bulba is dry hopped.
Yeah, and the point is that you're not blasting somebody with one flavor or another. It's just the perfect balance. And this is really what we always liked about the beers that we started bringing over in the early days, including Cantillon, honestly. It wasn't about extremes whatsoever. And now we have to play with that a little bit because that's just how the business is. But that's what's beautiful about these kind of breweries, and true of in the Franconia tour as well. It's just this beautifully balanced beer that's something that, in a way, is an introduction to something else from what the culture is here sometimes.
I found that, like, the really nice thing about European beers, especially, is that, like, because they're so indicative of that place, and that's a thing that all American breweries totally are all about now. They're like, well, this is our microflora, this is our terroir. You know, we bring these beers, and I know you guys, part of your portfolio is Jester King, and, you know, they love their, I mean, they make incredible beers, but they love, and it's true though, they talk about how their beers have this sense of place, like the way wine has terroir and stuff. Breweries like Terrier, I mean, like they make those beers in France, in that area of France. You know, it might be different 100 miles away, you know, but that's where he lives, that's the microflora that they have there.
And Jester King, for that reason, because they are really into that terroir and the locality, they've brewed collaborations with Terrier, with De La Seine, with Aubaron, because each one, you know, even if they're using similar ingredients from that region, you know, there definitely is a house flavor and a house culture, and you can put some of it down to the yeast, but some of it is, yeah, the microflora, even though you're not using wild yeast, they're using cultured yeast, but there's is something, and each system is just so completely different. Some of the older ones, like La Chulette, they still got copper vessels, you know, that are over 100 years old. There's a lot of what do you call the hot side aeration that a lot of American brewers would just like, oh no, you can't have that exposure to oxygen to the hot wort because you just, but you know, it's just like splashing out. It's, you know, and it still comes out with this lovely beer, which is just full of character.
It's a whole different experience, and that's the point of spending the money and going over there. And that's what we like to do as much as possible. And so we're just offering that experience. So we think it's a pretty great time.
Well, these are three beers that I drank for years and I could still drink for years. So one more time, we get De La Seine Taurus Bulba, the Terrier Extra Dry, and we had Duranki XX too, didn't we?
Not today.
Oh, yeah, let's say we did. So it all, I like that backstory about it. I remember when I first met you guys and met your brother Dan. You talked about the history of Belgium and that part of the world and how the use of hops was common. You want to go more into that? And I feel like that there's more of a story there than we're getting at.
Well, I mean, northern France and southern Belgium is part of the hop-growing region. And, you know, they also grow grain, malt. It was too cold to grow grapes, so that's why you have brewing in that area. And there's still a lot of hop fields, both in northern France and southern Belgium. Papenrode is a big hop town that a lot of people know in Belgium. There is the northern brewer Brewer's Gold is one of the hops that's grown locally that a lot of these brewers use. There's also Strichelspalt, which was it's grown more in the Alsace, but it has a little different flavor profile when it's grown up in northern France. But there's a lot of hops. So beer back in the day would have had a nice hoppy note to it. And that's what Yvonne from De La Seine, he's done a lot of research on this and found, like, a lot of people think of Belgian beers as big and boozy and sweet triples and
Trappist
styles.
Mm-hmm. Historically, not necessarily. That's
right.
Something that popped up recently since the micro beer boom or the craft beer boom.
So, you know, the fact that a lot of beers would have had the hoppy notes and, you know, maybe a lower ABV. And these brewers that we work with, some of them are now doing, using these older recipes.
Because these, like the Tyria is the extra dry. What's that, like four and a half percent?
Yeah.
The same as Taras Bulba.
Taras Bulba. Mm-hmm.
And how do these move for you, Alex? I mean, in terms of like just numbers, I mean, one thing I love about Spite and Dive, well, I love the short six drafts. I love that that's kind of carefully curated. But I also love the range. You must have like easily 50 quality bottles of beer at any time.
About 100, actually. But we definitely
I knew
have,
that, but I wanted you to say.
Yeah, I know. we definitely have our favorites. And I personally, being the beer buyer, I personally have my favorites too, and I like to put those beers up when they come by. Taras Bulba is one of my favorite beers of all time. That's what Desert Island beer for me. I could drink that every day for the rest of my life. And, you know, this Tyria, like I said, I love them. They're lovely people. Their beers are amazing. And when you get it on draft, it's like magic. It's one of the best things ever. So, you know, we have no problem moving these beers, bringing them in. You know, I like having permanent. We don't really have like permanent things, too many permanent items on our list. Like some Belgian things, I like to have some Trappists and, you know, but a lot of the Belgian stuff we'd like to keep on because that's what we're known for. And they're so good. And the world is so filled with so much good beer right now. It's also really good to remember that these beers are still there, you know, and they're just as good as they were well before, you know, quadruple hopped hazy IPA stuff happened, you know. So,
all right, let's take one more short break. We'll be back in a minute on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Allison Kane, and I'm the host of In the Sauce here on HRN. Now that I'm expanding my cooking school to a sauce line in grocery stores, I need all the help I can get. And I want to help other entrepreneurs build their brands too. You can find In the Sauce wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. All right, we got BR, Roya, and Joel Sheldon from Sheldon Brothers, and Alex from Spite and Dival. We're talking about Pêche Mortale, the Duduciel Imperial Coffee Stout. BR, you have a question for Alex? Or are you going to say something before the break?
Oh, no. When we were talking about our Belgian and French tour and the beers, the De La Seine and the Tyria and those other beers, and you know, Alex was saying how they're just going back to these enjoyable beers, and they're beers that I want to say are happy to sit in the background. They're very social beers where you can sit there with a pint of them and it doesn't demand your attention. They're not aggressive in your face, 10% or super, you know, triple dry hopped. And it's like I said, they're beers you can sip and you all, before you know it, you're done with a pint and you're talking with your friends. You know, as much.
And you're not screaming, you mean?
And not screaming.
That's the best thing about it.
If you have friends. But then you have friends. That's how you make friends, right? Without beer, you don't have friends.
True for me.
True for all of us. And Alex, so Saturday, it's going to be very ambitious at Spite and Dive. We're going to have six different Pêche Mortale kegs. Mm-hmm. And how is someone going to... Do you have a sampling program? How can I go and taste all six?
Well, I think we're going to do... We only generally speaking do two sizes of pours. It's fine. We have a pint and then we have a 12 ounce. But I think for this one, we'll probably offer all the Pêche as 12 and 6 ounces too, because we have little like snifter glasses. That way people can have more of it and spread it around a little bit more.
So I can try the barrel age. I can have the whiskey.
Yeah. You also, I mean, they're big beers too, so you don't want to drink. I mean, we do have people that come in and do that and just spend all afternoon and have a great time. And I'm one of those people. But
I'm a Pêche Mortale fan, too.
Yeah. It's also, just a quick note, too. It's also, talking about Belgian beers, it's also Orval Day, which is a new kind of festival day that they just started a couple of years ago. And all the proceeds of it go to a charity of the monastery's choice. So it's cool. So we have Original Sin, right? No, that's the name of the beer. Original Sin is Pêche Mortale. Right? So we have this like black.
Mortal Sin.
Mortal Sin, Deadly Sin. Not Original. Yeah. Deadly Sin, right?
Not Pêche Mortale, Jimmy, which means Deadly Peach.
Pêche.
Pêche.
So we're going to have
Deadly Sin.
We're going to have like all these vintages of Orval, because we have a pretty cool vintage collection of stuff that I've been holding on to from the past few years. And going back at least 5 years, 6 years worth of Orval. But we'll also have at the same time, like when your palate gets totally destroyed by drinking or Pesce Mortel, you can have something really light and clean to kind of.
So you're going to have 5 or 6 years of Orval available.
Yeah. Totally.
So, we did a show on Orval a few years ago, too, so I think we tasted that.
Yeah, it's going to be a great day. I mean, the people, it's funny because what happened, like, Pesce Mortel Day was always a great day, and they randomly, or maybe it was deliberate, I don't know, randomly, the Orval people decided that that was going to be the same day. They were going to have their day the same day. And so we participated in both, and it was like you had this great dichotomy of customers who were coming in, be like, no, I love Pesce Mortel. Well, I also love Orval. So then you'd have people turning it on to the other, one thing onto the other people. And all of a sudden it was like, everybody loved everything by the end of the day. And it was great. It was totally awesome. And, you know, so yeah, we'll have them all in some smaller sizes if for that stuff too.
Which bottle, is good
the,
for me.
Yeah, Orval's by the bottle, unfortunately. They don't make that on draft.
I'll be coming from Mugs Ale House in Williamsburg is also doing their annual Split Thy Skull, which is all big beers. Jeez. So it could be a messy weekend.
I think it's going to be awesome.
You make some new friends by drinking beer.
We're going to be screaming, Joel. It's going to be screaming.
I might be busy.
Alex, I wanted to ask a little more about, so like as a beer bar manager, how did you set an Orval vintage program, you know, what's your storage like? How do you
because of the facilities we have, because we have our sister restaurant is St. Anselm and they're next door. And we have the whole building above, a lot of people don't know this, but the whole building above St. Anselm is the offices and storage for Joe's company, the Carroll Group. And we have a lot of space up there, for especially for wine. So there's some cold rooms, like not cold, but like cellar temperature rooms. And, you know, he was cool enough. I said, hey, man, would it be cool if I kind of started putting some things, you know, that things that I liked, especially things that I like to drink that are like age really well, like De Dole and some of these Belgian beers and stuff like that. And he was like, yeah, of course. Cool. Go for it. So, you know, put some things away, you know, buy a case here, a case there, put it away, and forget about it, let it get dusty. And then, you know, later you pull it out and people are like, whoa, where did you get that? You know, and actually I was to say about, as a good reference to Split Thy Skull too, it's Ed, right? That's a cousin. Mm-hmm. Ed has like one of the deepest cellars like out there.
Mugs Ale House, yeah.
Mugs, his cellar, I mean, he's been doing that, what I just talked about, he's been doing that for over 20 years. So he's got some incredible stuff, you know, buried down there.
Barley wines, a lot of stuff.
Oh my God, yeah. So,
do you think he has any Spanish beers?
I don't think he has any Spanish beers. Speaking of Spanish beers, though, what is this delightful Spanish beer we're drinking?
This is a beer from Edge of Barcelona, the Apasionada. A little light sour beer. Delicious, I think.
It's delightful.
Speaking of peach, it has a little peach, kind of a peachy flavor to it, a little yeasty peachy flavor.
Will we be visiting Edge on our Barcelona tour?
That's the first brewery we'll be visiting on our tour in Barcelona.
So you've been talking about the Spanish beer tour for like 2 months.
Jimmy, I'm the only...
So you get to talk about it now.
I'm the only person in America selling Spanish craft beer.
And you're looking serious when you say that. Yeah. You have nothing else to say.
Don't mess with me.
But tell us the tour then. Quick.
So we talked a bit about the France Belgium, which is awesome. And I think it's... Actually, it's not exactly sold out, but I think we have a couple more spaces.
So it's Catalonia. It's beautiful countryside.
Yeah. So
right?
Catalonia, as they say it's trying to be a different country, but it's the Mediterranean coast of northern Spain, and Barcelona being the capital and a beautiful place on its own right, whether you go for the beer or not. And in fact, a lot of our tour has to do with tapas, and we're going to go to natural wine bars. We're going to a winery to try cava. All kinds of things. So it's mixing all these things. It's not just about just drinking IPAs or something.
Do you have cider on that too?
You know, it's interesting. Cidra is not very popular. And we'll probably get some in one of the bars, and they pour it the right way and everything. But there's just... Barcelona is basically the bar capital of the world. There's different drinks everywhere and different food everywhere. And that's really what the thing's focusing on. But the fact is, there's great breweries there now, and it wasn't like that just 10 years ago. And so it's a little bit of a change from our France-Belgium tour or our Germany tour, where those places have been steeped in beer for so long. So it's a contrast. And it's a whole like crazy little giddy little new scene there, and really, really fun. And there are some great beers from Edge. We're going to a can release the same night. We're going to the next night. We're going to Black Lab, which is an American expat brewing in Barcelona by the ocean. And the same night, we're going to a can release at Garage Brewing, which is sort of a British expat brewery there, which is a great place. I think we've had their beer here in New York a little bit. And it goes on from there. But we're trying Edge right now, which is, I think, is really nice. Apasionada, it's called. So they make all kinds of beer in Spain now. They, IPA is the most popular locally, but they make a lot of sours.
IPA?
Barrel aged. IPA, yeah, IPA. Yeah. No, it's a real blast. So I hope some people will get in touch with me about going on that tour in June, which is a beautiful time. We're going to be at the beach as well, so don't miss it.
And so does it include airfare, hotels, what?
Airfare, we like to keep that not part of it, because we encourage people to go off on their own before that and go around before they go there and go afterwards. And it's too complicated for us. We don't want to be travel agents exactly. So it just includes most of the stuff involved in the tour, most of the food, most of the drinks, and all that.
But so you should, and all the hotels.
You show
all the
up hotels, at a certain. Yeah. Where do you show up at the hotel first? Where do you check in? Or you show up at the
basically you get there. We want people who are savvy about getting around a little bit, and because it's part of the experience, you know, we want people who know how to travel and stuff, and because we want to experience what the Shelton Brothers experience.
So basically, you fly into Barcelona, you get to the hotel, and we'll take it from there and give you some free time as well to explore on your own.
When you get sick of us, you can have free time, but it's a lot of stuff happening. It's going to be a crazy experience in Barcelona.
What about, is it kid-friendly? Like, say, Alex goes with his three-year-old or not?
I don't know if Barcelona is the best one for a three-year-old, because there's going to be very late nights. Franconia. I was trying to tell Alex before the show, Franconia is where he should bring his kid in northern Bavaria, where people bring their kids to the beer garden. So that's a whole nother tour, which is totally separate from all these other ones we're talking about. So.
Who's on that tour? Because that's the other one I want to go on.
First. Oh, well, we can, with some of the best lagers in the world. We go to Mars. Yes. We go to Kaysmon across the street. It was great Pilsner.
Yes.
We go to Bayer, which is a beer we used to import, in Gravity Kegs, which is maybe one of the best beers I've ever had in my life. Munksenbacher, which is about 10 miles away. Maybe the other best beer I ever had in my life. And then we go to a town called Zeil am Main, where we import Güler from. It's a Rauch beer, but it's a wine town, so we're going to have wine that night. And it just sort of goes from there. We go to a bunch of beer gardens. We go to a couple of big fests, including Kulmbacher Beer Voca. So we're going to be hoisting leaders and wearing lederhosen. It's the whole thing.
Leaders and lederhosen.
But it's not it's not just, it's not like going to Oktoberfest. It's like going to a real German fest where it's all locals and you go nuts. But it's the real thing.
Those three right there, Alex, I mean, we got to go. Because
let's go.
Belgium and France.
I mean, like right
some
now.
Some of my
let's
favorite
go.
Breweries. Barcelona for the lifestyle. I mean, I got to check it out.
When is the German one again?
That's July 25 through 31. Okay. So it's a perfect time, and it's really nice and warm there, so you can just drink liter after liter. I mean, I would never do that, but you can do it if you want.
And one day, Montreal.
Well, if these go well, and it's up to your listeners, Jimmy, to make this go well this year.
So how did they find out about the Shelton Brothers Tours?
Well, you go look up, what's it called?
Insider Tours.
Is it called Shelton? It's just called Insider Tours. Oh boy, that's our problem. If you Google Shelton Brothers Insider Tours, you'll see the itineraries.
There's an Instagram at Shelton Brothers Tours as well. I saw that.
Yeah, it's out there. I think we're not the greatest at getting stuff out there sometimes, but if you take a look, you'll see how awesome it's going to be. And you really have to see these places in person.
Well, I just love what you guys are doing. I mean, I love that now so many of the American craft brewers are like going over. Making beers with these obscure small brewers that I always loved and I was associated with you guys, and it was fun tasting through these different beers today. And Alex, man, you keep the flame going. You and Joe Carroll over there, Spite and Dial has always been one of my favorite beer bars in New York.
Same
thanks,
here.
Jim.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. Let's everyone go around just to say their name one more time, and we'll sign off.
BR with Shelton Brothers.
Hey, I'm Alex from Spite and Dival.
I'm Joel with Shelton Brothers.
And I'm Jimmy Carboni, the host. Big shout out to our producer, Justin Kennedy, engineer, Matt Patterson, intern, assistant producer, Dylan Hoyer. I think it's her last night. So thank you, Dylan, for 6 good months. And Aaliyah Paps will be our new intern. She's here today, too. So got a lot of great people here helping out on Heritage Radio Network. This is our 10th year, 10th anniversary. So everybody, we'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.